Bankless Nation, it is the third week of April. It's a special week. This only happens once every 4 years. I'm talking about the Bitcoin halving. David, it is Bitcoin halving week. How are you celebrating?
I'm actually throwing a party now that you're asked.
Are you really?
Yeah. Which all my friends are like, why are you throwing a
party? Is it a halving
party? Yeah, it's a halving party. Yeah.
No way. What do you do? Like, what do you do for
I invite friends over and I feed them drinks.
Talk about Bitcoin?
Yeah, talk about Bitcoin.
Sound money?
Yeah.
Hand out the Bitcoin standard? Safety net moose?
Well, you know, I have a signed copy of the Bitcoin standard by Safety
Net
Moose.
I know you do.
Yeah.
This is a true story.
It's addressed to the shit corner, which is me.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's accurate as well. So we got to start with that, though. We got to celebrate that because it happens only once every 4 years.
Yeah.
And I think this is our second halvening as a Bitcoin podcast.
As a Bitcoin podcast, that's right.
That's funny. That was actually a slip of the tongue. I said Bitcoin podcast, but, like, keeping it in. So you're having this party, David, but the halvening is scheduled to happen on Saturday. The big question I think in everyone's mind is this going to be bullish or bearish for Bitcoin prices? What about David?
We got some takes in the show to talk about that. WorldCoin and OKX are releasing their layer twos. Do we need more layer twos? How will they differ? Will they bring new users on chain? In addition to more layer twos, Kraken is also opening up their own wallet, their beautiful wallet, which I've got my phone. We'll debut that here in a second. What's the deal about the Kraken wallet? Open source, privacy first. It's great. What else we got talking about, Ryan?
Hong Kong, they are front running the US. They just got their Ethereum ETF, okay? In addition to a Bitcoin ETF, they got an Ethereum ETF. So the question is, does this mean big inflows in Asia? We'll talk about that. And the next Ethereum upgrade is going to make Ethereum wallets great again. They could use an upgrade, I would say. So we'll talk about that. Also, alt restaking is now a thing? Question mark? What is this? Non-eigenlayer restaking?
And then last up, Solana is patching their chain, deployed a patch to account for some of the transaction spam that's going in. And now Solana is no longer broken. Solana is now fixed. But there is still a roadmap to perfect the engineering around the Solana ecosystem. So we'll talk about that and more.
Perfection, huh? Search perfection. Of perfection.
Perfection of engineering. Perfection. Yeah.
Okay, so before we get in, we got to shout out our friends over at Safe Wallet. Mm-hmm. It is account abstraction season. I feel like is going to be a massive year for Ethereum wallets. Safe is the wallet that Bankless uses to secure all of its funds. Mm-hmm. So this has been a wallet we trusted for a while, and they got something cool coming up. What do they want folks in the Bankless Nation to know?
Yeah, so Safe is actually probably everyone's first account abstraction wallet on, especially on the layer one. They've held over $100 billion of TVL since Gnosis Safe was deployed like forever ago. Safe is building the on-chain ownership layer with now smart accounts. They're trying to forge a future where smart accounts are embedded within every app on the web, on the entire internet, not just Ethereum. Mm. So we can give the internet ownership over assets and data and identity. They want you to build with a Safe smart account. There is a link in the show notes so you can get started building with a Safe smart account. And also they want you to go to SafeCon. That's May 23rd in Berlin. And so if you are interested in building with Safe or building an account abstraction, or you're just in Berlin or Europe, go to SafeCon. There's a link in the show notes for that as well.
David, before we get to the prices though and markets, I think we need to spend a minute to talk about the Bitcoin halving.
More halving content.
Yeah, more halving content on this Bitcoin podcast that you've come to appreciate. All right, so we are this, according to this timer, we are at the time of recording 1 day until the halving. So does
one day
this
and
mean,
6 hours.
Is this going to happen on April 19th then? By the time people get this episode, will it be halving day?
I think it actually might depend on where you are in the world. I think only maybe Hawaii is going to have the Bitcoin halving on 420. Everyone else will have it on 419.
Okay.
So I think this happens like 10 p.m. Like 10, maybe the West Coast also has it in 422. But I think this happens like 10 p.m. Eastern time on Friday tomorrow. Today for the time of listeners.
Do we need to recap like what the halving actually is?
But I think we're going to do it anyways.
Okay. So what is it?
So for every 210,000 blocks, so 210,000 blocks times 10 minutes gives you approximately every 4 years, the Bitcoin reward for mining a Bitcoin block gets cut in half. The Bitcoin reward for mining the first Bitcoin blocks was 50 Bitcoins per block back when Bitcoin was literally valueless. And then it went from 50 to 25 in 2012. It went from 25 to 12.5 in 2016, 12.5 to 6.25 in May of 2020. And now, tomorrow, today for listeners, It's going to go from 6.25 down to 3.125 Bitcoin per block.
So this is the fourth one out of, you know, I guess there have been three previous, and we have some history. So a question in everyone's mind is, what is price going to do? Because everyone knows this is written in the code of Bitcoin. It's been here since inception. Everyone knows what's going to happen. There's always this question of, have people front run this? Is the market already priced it in? What's going to happen to price? This is a tweet from Bitwise doing some analysis on this. What do they say?
They just basically show the returns on Bitcoin for the year after the halving. And so for 2012, it was a whopping 8,800% price appreciation.
Oh, okay. Is that what we can expect?
Sorry, Bitcoin listeners, you should not be expecting that.
That'd be nice,
in 2016, it was 285%. And then in 2020, it was 550%. So we have yet to have, out of three data points, we're about to have the fourth, we are yet to have a bearish year post-halving for Bitcoin.
Historically, it's always been real good.
Real good.
After the halving, between 285% and 8,839%.
Right. I will say, actually, so both 2016 and 2020, which were very strong performing years for Bitcoin, it was actually the year after those years that were the better of those 2 years. So in 2016, Bitcoin was up something like 1,000%. And in 2021, Bitcoin was also up something even higher.
Now, people say this time could be different, of course, because like maybe we front ran some of that demand. We got a Bitcoin ETF in January, which was a few years. We've never had a Bitcoin ETF before, so maybe it's different in that way. But also, there's something that happens in the month following the halving, which is the month we're in. So if you're like a near-term one-month trader, what has traditionally happened in the month after the halving?
Nothing significant. In 2012, we were up 9%. In 2016, we were down 10%. And in 2020, we were up 6%. And so basically it's saying, hey, like, zoom out, think long term. Don't think about, like, don't buy Bitcoin now because of the halving is tomorrow. Think about it on like a longer time frame than that.
I mean, you say it's not significant, and I agree, like, but the significance is it's super flat in the month after, right? And then, like, so don't expect this to get, like, immediately priced in. I mean, the market's kind of anticipating this, I suppose.
Everyone has seen the happening coming. It has been in the code since Genesis.
Yes. All right, so there is something that is actually shipping with this happening, and has nothing to do with the Bitcoin Core protocol. So it's not like the code itself is undergoing any upgrade, but simultaneously with the halving is the shipping of Bitcoin runes. What's the significance of that? Why is that happening on the halving?
Yeah, so if you are paying attention to Bitcoin land, runes is like the very hyped thing that is being released. The code, the core, the Bitcoin software for runes is being released tomorrow. This is Casey Rodemore, who created Bitcoin ordinals, NFTs on Bitcoin, using Bitcoin as like a data availability layer of sorts, just to inscribe JPEGs on the Bitcoin blockchain. He has since figured out a way to do a very similar thing, creative construction of the nooks and crannies of Bitcoin block space, to produce fungible tokens inside of Bitcoin, like enshrined on the layer one. This is not a layer two on Bitcoin. This is not like a sidechain to Bitcoin. This is inside of the layer one, fungible tokens, using Bitcoin block space. And so this is a very hyped thing in Bitcoin land. This is launching with a halving. We did a show with Casey yesterday. It came out yesterday, if you want to learn more about it. Probably one of the more hyped things that I've heard in the Bitcoin sphere in a very long time.
I think these are like the most legit Bitcoin tokens idea that we've seen so far. And why is Casey releasing this on halving? Just because?
Why the hell not?
Why not? So it's nothing to do with it. He's just chose this as a shelling point. Very cool. All right. So what about prices on the week? Where are we at on the Bitcoin price?
Down about 10%. Start of the week, a little bit above 70,000, currently at $62,500.
Thanks to Kraken Pro for these charts, even though they are down.
Make them go up.
Yeah, please, Kraken, help us with that. I feel like it was a rough week. Look at some of these red spikes downwards.
It has been a rough couple of weeks, hasn't
it? Yeah, it's just like, especially over the weekend, there were some spikes downwards. And the question, of course, when we go down, mostly when we go down,
why?
People don't ask these questions.
Why did we go down?
When we go up, it's like, oh, we knew this was going to happen. It's inevitable, you know. But like when we go down, we need some sort of rational explanation for this. Yeah. And there are a few different explanations people have turned to. What are they?
Well, there's always the tax scapegoat. So April 15th was tax day in the United States. Is it tax day just in the United States, or is that like a global day?
Oh, like,
do other people use April 15th for taxes, or is it just us?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I've never paid taxes, income taxes in another country, David, so I just don't know. Yeah, but so April 15th, you have to get your taxes.
To the IRS. And so, like, if you don't have the money in your bank account, then you have to sell your assets in order to pay for your taxes.
Do you think
so,
people do this? Do you think people are like, it's April
14th? I don't
14th,
know what other people's
like,
strategies
oh,
are.
Oh, no, I owe, like, thousands of dollars. I better sell some Bitcoin to go pay this.
Yeah, like if you are like buzzer beating the selling of your assets to pay for your taxes, do people do that? I don't really know. This is why people always don't really know, like, whether the tax sell-off is real or just noise. But we can use it as
a skip. It could be one of those reflexive things where everyone thinks it's a thing, so it becomes a thing.
Yeah. So anyways, it's scapegoat number one, taxes. Scapegoat number two, Iran versus Israel. Markets do not like uncertainty. They do not like war. They do not like instability. And so over the weekend, Iran sent some drones and missiles over to Israel, which were intercepted. People were worried about this being escalating into a regional conflict. The meme is that this would turn into World War III, which is definitely bad for markets. And so that's scapegoat number three.
Scapegoat. This one to me felt kind of legitimate,
Felt real.
Over the weekend, I was like, whoa, drones and missiles?
I was also
slightly
worried.
On?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. So maybe some legitimacy there, at least from my perspective. What else we got?
Scapegoat number three, BTC inflows kind of muted. We've actually had not any net new inflows into the Bitcoin ETFs for almost like a month now. So while there are flows into the new Bitcoin ETFs, there are similar outflows out of Grayscale. So there's no net new TVL going into the Bitcoin ETFs for about a month, which is, you know, coincidentally how long we've been about flat for.
Okay, so maybe inflows have kind of like stopped and people see that and, you know, they're like, okay, well, the ETF party's over. What else we got?
Scapegoat number four, stock market's down, actually. So the SPY is actually like a good 50 points off its high. So down like, I think, 15%. So SPY down 4.5% off of the high. Look, we got Ryan to do that little charty chart thing.
Yeah, thanks.
So, I mean, 5% off of the SPY is like, that's like a big deal.
You're 5% down?
Oh, no.
Come on, guys.
Oh, the global economy is 5% off.
You want to be real investors, just like crypto volatility, all right? Yeah. Try me.
Anyways, SPY goes down 5%. Crypto is going to catch a cold. And so that's what's happened.
You know what's interesting about this is, gold has been up.
Gold's
relentlessly
pumping.
Up. On like the
gold's
last
pumping.
Month, and like news of the weekend did not stop gold's ascent. So, is Bitcoin trading like a risk off asset? I thought it was like a digital gold, right. And it's been interesting that it hasn't been trading like that. So, you would think at least some narratives would say that global turmoil equals, of course, like, you know, wars, and like rumors of wars. Governments are going to print money, aren't they, in order to pay for this stuff? And so, shouldn't a non-state store of value pump? You know, gold has. Why not Bitcoin? You have any takes?
I don't know why gold is pumping. Obviously, I'm not like a macro expert. It is a little bit sus that like people were talking about gold pumping and then right into the Iran conflict. But what the hell do I know? Overall, just like the whole hopium for the setup right now is just like basically the inverse of all of these things. Like the tax sell-off isn't real or it's behind us now. Iran versus Israel actually stabilizes. Eventually, the inflows into the Bitcoin ETFs will surpass the outflows out of Grayscale. That is also just inevitability. And, you know, the SPY can't go down forever. It's also designed to go up only. And we are currently oversold in the world of the RSI indicator, if you are a believer of such a thing. What does that mean? That just means like you can't have that many selling days in a row before there's a buying day.
Yeah, there'll be some recovery, right?
There'll be some recovery.
At least in the short run.
If 2% increase in the SPY is like, you know, a 20% increase in Bitcoin.
Oh, you know what? We didn't have. There's a number five explanation, actually, we didn't cover, which is like the Fed is definitely talking about delaying the reduction of interest rates, right? Inflation's burning a little hot. And that's kind of bled over. So if you want another reason, there's a fifth reason for you.
Also, you know what? The halving, it's also bullish.
Here's the thing, though. You got to put this into perspective. And here's a good tweet to keep this in perspective. There have only been 38 days in all of Bitcoin history where we've ever had a closing price where we currently are, which is above 61K, like above 60K. Actually, are we above 60K at the time of recording? I mean, somewhere close to that, right?
Yeah, we're 62 and a half. 62.
Yeah, yeah.
We never got down below 60K.
it's only been 38 days.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, we're in kind of the same range of all-time highs that we've been in for the last, you know, like, month and a half. There's some perspective for you.
We haven't really experienced price discovery in crypto yet. So Bitcoin broke through the $69,000 all-time highs to get to like up to 73, 74. That's not price discovery. No one has experienced price discovery.
You're getting your wish. A nice slow
right.
bull
run. That's exactly
you're
what I was going
your
with.
Wish.
Yeah. Like breaking out out through all-time highs and then achieving like escape velocity to the moon. That should be hard. Like,
feels healthy.
Let's draw this place out. Let's like the normies aren't here yet. Like it's still just us. Like enjoy this time.
All right. Well, so how about ETH price? Are we doing something similar?
Yeah, down 13%. Start of the week, $3,500. Ending the week where we are now at $30,400. Got all the way down. I mean,
that was a harsh spike.
No way was that real. What?
Yeah, is that's this real.
Oh my God. Wow.
That's real. Okay. Didn't you look at the charts over the weekend?
I'm not during that blip where Ryan is highlighting a wick down to $2,530. Yikes. Wow. No wonder so many people got liquidated last week. No, what is this, 4-hour candle? No 4-hour candle lasted, went below $2,900. So, yeah.
That's pretty low, $2,500. Great buying opportunity if you snipe some.
Congrats to anyone who sniped that. This is why it's always nice to have powder available with, like, we call these stink bids. Just like
stink bids?
You never heard of
this? We call them stink bids?
Traders call these stink birds.
I'm not of your kind,
it's,
David.
It's when you
know
set a limit order so unreasonably low that you just hope that you like kind of win a lottery with like some volatility.
So you have those.
It's basically kind of like a put.
Limit orders.
Like, it's a spot. It's a spot market put.
Yeah. Stink All bid. Right. So what's your stink bid at right now for this market?
You got any? I don't have.
I still have my triple digit stink bids. That
yeah, you are. Those are not getting filled. And those are not getting filled.
Yeah, I think I've capitulated on that. Let's talk about ETH gas price though. Real high, actually.
Yeah.
Almost 500 Gwei at certain points. That is
we experienced
expensive.
A 1-hour period of negative 10% deflation of ETH supply because of all the liquidation.
So that's a nice ETH holder framing on it. But like for the users, it's really expensive. What's nice about this, David Michal is showing there's a bifurcation in terms of gas market. What's he saying here?
Yeah, so the Ethereum layer one experienced 500 Gwei gas prices. Ethereum blob price, so like blob space for layer twos, completely unaffected by the congestion fees on the layer one. So layer twos were completely buffered from all of the liquidations and shenanigans and congestion happening at the layer one. So if you were on Base or Optimism or Arbitrum or ZK Sync or Polygon, you had absolutely no awareness or concern about the congestions of the layer one.
It's like getting stuck in a traffic jam and then you look over and there's that high occupancy vehicle lane and cars
and
just like
zooming,
whistling by.
Just zooming.
Full speed ahead.
Don't care about you.
That's what was going on. And it's great because now for the first time post blob space, there are two separate markets for this as it should be. So the question is, what are the prices on ETH layer twos? Is that still hanging down? What are we looking at?
Yeah, so this is a brand new website, part of the website of growthepie.xyz, which if you are interested in just looking at the fee dynamics, the economics of layer twos, this is definitely the website for you. So fees.growthepie.xyz is this new website and just shows you the fees for all the different chains. 0.15 cents, not 15 cents, 0.15 cents to transfer ETH on Zora, 0.41 cents to swap fees on Zora.
Under a cent. Real cheap.
Yes, under everything is
fractions
under a cent
of a
here.
Penny.
Yeah, the only systems that are above a penny are systems that are not yet using blob space. So Linea not yet using blob space.
They are actually Linea? I could sort this, but okay, look at this. They are, but like look at this. You can sort by data availability blobs. I don't know. Linea is it's premium stuff. It's good stuff over there.
All right, Linea. Good stuff over there.
Let's see.
What's the cheapest thing to... Arbitrum is the cheapest chain to swap tokens on for 0.65 cents.
What a deal. What a deal. Nice. I see some trades over in Arbitrum these days. Crypto market cap, where are we hanging in?
$2.4 trillion.
Let's do another quick look at layer twos in the layer two world. David, you got some stats for us. This update, of course, is brought to you by one of our favorite layer twos, which is Mantle. They're always placed quite high on the charts, hanging in at number five. What do you want to look at this week?
Yeah, so drop down below $40 billion in TVL on layer twos. We're at an 11x scaling factor. So 11 Ethereums on layer twos. So these numbers haven't really changed, but I think what is cool actually is we talk about layer 2 beat for all the layer 2s, but now we're moving on to layer 3s, Ryan. I don't know if you've noticed this. Base, which is a Arbitrum orbit chain that settles down to the base chain.
Okay.
Which settles down to Ethereum.
Okay. Arbitrum,
the degen layer 3 is now doing the most transactions per second out of all the layer 2s.
Okay, so a layer 3, is a layer 3 just a layer, a chain built on top of a layer 2? Is
That's
it really
exactly
that simple?
Right. It's really that simple, yeah.
Okay, so there is a chain called Degen Chain, which is killing it in terms of transactions per second, and that is just built on top of the base chain, which is built on top of Ethereum.
Yep. So Degen Chain is the number one chain that's on a layer 2 that's doing the most transactions per second, and the number 2... transactions per second chain is base, which is where Degen Chain settles to.
Okay. I just have one question for you, David.
Sure.
When layer 4? Okay. We could just like keep stacking them.
I think it stops at the layer 3 level it kind of just stops at layer 3s. If you are doing a layer 4, it's because you are doing it for the meme. You can do that. There's nothing stopping you.
I want to do
but
that.
You just want to
build
that
on top of Degen.
Yeah, you should ask Andrew from Quantum. You're gonna need some help on that one. Settle on top of Degen.
David, what do we have coming up?
WorldCoin is going from its app to a chain. We're getting World Chain. If you didn't have enough layer twos, well, you just got another one. But this one's different. So if you are a verified human, you will be given a first class treatment on World Chain. We're gonna talk about that. OKX also doing another chain. They're doing another
layer
we're
two,
still
though.
Talking about layer twos. Which framework did they choose?
Huh?
And then also Kraken. Congrats, guys. Launched their wallet. Privacy first, open source, and absolutely beautiful. I'm going to show you all, Ryan, I'm going to show you all my NFTs that are on my Kraken wallet.
Okay.
And I got them in there. So we're going to get to all of that and more. But first, we're going to hear directly from Kraken, our preferred exchange and now wallet. If you do not have an account with Kraken, or if you haven't downloaded their wallet,
go get the wallet.
Go get the wallet. Yeah, go do that. And then make your an account with Kraken. Let's go hear from them right now. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/banklist to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Have you heard about Safe? They're not just pioneers in crypto custody. They're also leading the transition to the world of smart accounts. With Safe, managing your crypto has never been smarter or safer. They've recently passed $100 billion in total value secured and are now deployed everywhere, with over 15 supported networks. But that's not all. Safe is revolutionizing the game with their full compatibility with ERC-4337, making embedding wallets super easy to integrate into your daily crypto activities. So, what are you waiting for? Head over to safe.global to join over 8 million others in securing your crypto. And while you're there, don't forget to check out SafeCon, happening during the Berlin Blockchain Week, where the future of smart accounts is unfolding in real life. Secure your spot today and be a part of the transition to smart accounts. Click the link in the show notes to learn more and take your first steps towards smarter crypto management. Taking self-custody of your crypto is one of the most important things you can do on your bankless journey. It's also one of the hardest things to get right, with huge consequences if you don't. If you want help going bankless, talk to Casa. Casa helps you take custody of your crypto assets so you don't have to wonder whether you're doing it right. Casa is a one-stop shop for doing self-custody the right way. With Casa Vaults, you can hold Ether, Bitcoin, stablecoin, all with one simple app and multiple keys for the ultimate peace of mind, with a support team to help you every step of the way. But it doesn't stop at self-custody, because even though crypto is forever, you are not. We all plan on making life-changing wealth in crypto, but with Casa's inheritance product, life-changing wealth can elevate to generational wealth for your kids and your loved ones who don't know anything about crypto. With Casa, you won't lose your private keys and you won't accidentally take them to the grave either. Click the link in the description to get started securing your generational wealth.
Not to overshadow the happening, David, but it is chain week. It is layer 2 week on Bankless as well. Okay, we got two big layer 2 announcements. One of them just went live on mainnet, so let's start there. WorldCoin introduced World chain. All right, the last I heard about WorldCoin, they were trying to, you know, stick orbs in everyone's faces and scan your eyeballs. Oh, they're still doing that?
Still doing that, yeah.
So I had seen, I think, a headline that they got to about 5 million humans with, like, iris scans. So that's the level. Anyway, that aside, what are they doing? What is WorldChain?
So WorldChain has always been a part of the WorldCoin vision. So anyone who's been like deep in the WorldCoin world, this actually is not a surprise. It is an OP stack fork. It is a part of the Superchain Collective, but it has a very intimate technical relationship with its own World ID and WorldCoin app. And so if you verify yourself, your iris, I mean, within the WorldCoin system, you are a verified human on the WorldChain, and you actually get subsidized transactions on WorldChain, as in free. Not infinitely free, but I'm sure this model is going to change. But the idea is really to bifurcate humans from bots on WorldChain. And so if you are a human, because you are proven to be human because of your iris, you get a private key that's associated with your iris, you get to have first class position on WorldChain.
A couple of things, you know, WorldCoin as an app so far is about 44% of OP mainnet's activity. Yeah. At this point, I didn't realize.
Which
I
think
high.
It's a part of the WorldCoin system, because like verifying a human and putting their iris, the hash data of your iris on chain. I think that's how that works.
And they're launching this. Did you say this as an OP stack chain?
It's an OP stack chain inside of the collective.
Okay. So they're joining the super chain. So eventually all of these will be integrated. You know, feelings aside, people have lots of passionate feelings about WorldChain and using biometric data to identify humans and all of that. Don't want to step. We've had that conversation before. I'm just not stepping into that conversation. The idea of having a chain that is human aware, right? Any sort of block space that is human aware is new.
That's
and
really cool.
I think that's
cool
actually
concept.
It's interesting, right? Because well, we have all sorts of Sybil resistant problems, not just in crypto, not just on client on the internet, but like even specifically crypto, like in the here and now. It's like, I want to provide an airdrop to all of my real human users. How do I do that? I have no idea. You could be a bot farm account with like hundreds of different accounts. And by the way, I'm not saying that WorldCoin isn't gameable, because I've also seen some like ways where it can be gamed. But it is at least better. It is more Sybil resistant than just like being able to spin up any sort of wallet and like track it that way. So human aware block space, human aware chain, where we can tell who the real people are and who the bots are. Do you think that's significant?
Yeah. And I think that we won't really know how or why it's significant. We won't have examples for this until like they meaningfully get built. But really, like the whole idea is that we have this platform to do activities and behaviors that we haven't had before. And that really starts with having some decent levels of assurances that devs building on this block space get to know that they are actually having individual humans as their users rather than getting bot farmed. And so like the Blast layer 2 pitch is like, yo, we have native yield. So come build on our platform, come put your money on our platform. And the WorldChain pitch is like, yo, we have real individual non-Sybil humans. So therefore come build on our platform.
Zooming out for a second, you and I have talked about this like recently, and I think we want to do an entire episode on this, like the dead internet theory. What is the dead internet theory?
The dead internet theory is this theory that I came across from this various AI conversations. It's this online conspiracy theory. I'm like 4 for 4 on conspiracy theories in podcasts in the last few weeks, by the way.
Okay. This is a bigger one, though.
It asserts that now the internet is actually mostly bots, and the activity of the internet is mostly bots. And the content generated on the internet, on Facebook, is actually mostly bots. And so like the internet is actually a human devoid place. And now we're getting to the point where like it's bots consuming content by bots, producing content for bots. And actually like a lot of the commerce of like startups and internet companies are actually just like, it's actually bots facilitating bots, and we actually don't know it. And so the internet is actually more dead than we actually assume.
It's like a bunch of bots pretending to be humans too, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So you said, you pitched that as a conspiracy theory. I think the framing of it, of like saying that internet theory, like if you were to say there are no humans on the internet anymore, that would be like very far in kind of the conspiracy. But like what you just said, I don't consider that a that's evident. I mean, go try to interact on Twitter.
At the very least, it's the trend.
Right. And like with all of the AI content and like deepfake type ability mm-hmm. you have, like it's going to continue to do that. I mean, you're not going to know whose Instagram account is real apart from some sort of proof of personhood type of protocol. Right. I guess that's the entire point of WorldChain or WorldCoin and maybe WorldChain. But I don't know how much of a conspiracy theory it is. Like that's just like what's self-evidently going on.
You could be listening to a podcast and one of them might be a bot. You just don't know.
One of the hosts of the hosts. Podcast, your favorite podcast that you listen to. You don't even know if that person's a real human or not. That's not the only layer two that we need to talk about this week. OKX, which is a crypto exchange, one of the world's largest, top mm-hmm. three, top five, something like this, just launched X Layer. This is a layer two on Ethereum. It is, I believe, a ZK EVM. I think it's mm-hmm. built on the Polygon stack. What else do we need to know?
It's also one of the first chains to use the Polygon ag layer. So if you've been paying attention to like chain development in the space, Polygon has really been promoting their like ag layer solution for global liquidity interoperability, not just for Polygon chains, but just actually kind of anyone. And so this chain, the OKX X layer, which we're going to get this confused with Twitter X, but whatever. So they're using ag layer. And so all of the chains that tap into the Polygon ag layer can actually share liquidity with each other, like perfectly interoperable liquidity. So more chains that leverage the ag layer all kind of add to a central liquidity pool. And there's also going to be the OKB token as the native token on X layer. Interesting that they're calling it X chain or X layer instead of X chain. I like that. I like that change of pace. And so they will also be able to use this to pay the transaction fees thanks to the ag layer.
Yeah, I think this is a big deal because this is another major exchange that has entered the space, thrown their hat in the ring. And like there's, the meme of, is this the base for Polygon? Mm-hmm. So it's another large exchange. It's outside the US, of course, primarily. And it is on a different layer two stack, which is Polygon instead of Optimism, and gets the benefit from ag layer from the start, which is, again, composability across the entire Polygon ecosystem of chains. So if we do a rundown, David, of exchanges with an Ethereum layer two at this point, we've got Coinbase. All right, we know about Base Chain. Bybit is associated mm-hmm. with Mantle. They've kind of like funded that and brought that to market. Now we have
Bybit
OKX.
Turned themselves into a DAO, and then that DAO produced their own chain, which is Mantle.
Yeah. Now we have OKX doing one. There are two other exchanges kind of on my list, which is like Kraken and Binance. And by the way, there's been rumor that Kraken is sort of like investigating a layer two. Right?
They won't tell us though.
And then Binance, they have a side chain effectively that I think there's a roadmap for it to become a layer two, if that ever made sense. So I think it's only a matter of time before all of the major exchanges have their own layer twos. And this is something that we've predicted for a long time, actually, on Bankless. Not to just pat ourselves on the back. We sometimes do that. Okay, first it's the exchanges. Then I think it's going to be the banks. Because what's the next proximate thing to an exchange? It's probably a fintech company, like a PayPal, for instance, or like a Revolut, or like a TransferWise or something like this. And then eventually we'll get to the stage where, what are banks anyway? They're all side chains. They're all ledgers.
They're all ledgers.
So if they settle on top of a global settlement system, if they settle on top of Ethereum, they become a layer two, or maybe a layer three, or maybe a layer four. I don't know. But some sort of chain on top that's settling. So we're just knocking them down from my perspective. And that's why I'm super excited that exchanges are now going towards crypto nativity and becoming a bit more blockchain native.
One thing I think might be cool to see is that banks are always just going to have a hard time getting comfortable with this. So I could totally see some like trad bank, some like, TradFi, Wells Fargo-esque bank making a layer two on Ethereum, but actually it's private and only for them, as in like they're the only ones with write access. But then they give like select parties read access. Maybe it's an encrypted layer two. I don't know. That technology is not here yet, but it will be. But like some sort of just like they just leverage a blockchain for their internal accounting and as like an insurance mechanism and efficiency mechanism for themselves. And then they can, like, they elect to go up and down between Ethereum, the layer one, and their private layer two that they control. I think that, I don't know if that future is a thing, but I could totally see it.
JP Morgan has a chain. Right. It's formerly called Quorum, or it's mm-hmm. just basically a private blockchain. It's just not right. public. Mm-hmm. And making the transition to make aspects of that public and settled to mm-hmm. Ethereum could be a thing. So really cool.
Yeah. Speaking of Kraken, who does not have a chain yet, but maybe they will one day, they do have a wallet, though. And if you're going to build a wallet, you're getting pretty close to building a chain. I'm just saying.
What's the next
step? Here's my Kraken wallet. I loaded up my Crypto Coven, an old NFT that I have. I think it's pretty pretty.
It's blurry.
Have you opened up your wallet? Go. Yeah. Have you opened up your Kraken wallet?
There it is. That looks beautiful.
It does look beautiful.
Yeah. So I downloaded it. I started with a fresh set of keys. You already got stuff mm-hmm. on there. So how did you do it?
Well, I have a seed phrase of like my petty cash that I keep on my phone. And so all the wallets that I use, I just load up the same seed phrase.
Yeah.
Nice trick, actually.
So what do you think so far?
It's nice and purple. It's the Kraken. It's absolutely beautiful. Let's see. So you have different chains. You have all the assets, right? It was really nice to see my NFTs in there that I wanted to see, and all the spam ones were not in there by default. So I didn't have to do anything with that. And then different chains. I don't think there's bridging yet. So you can't bridge between layer twos, but you can send and receive on layer twos. There's also like Solana support for people who like to play on Solana. But then there's also Wallet Connect. So like you can basically do anything inside of Ethereum DeFi via Wallet Connect.
They're doing the cross chain thing kind of nicely, where it's just like all abstracted. So you don't have to know what chain you're on. You don't have to go switch around like you do in some older wallets. So I really like that. From a behind the scenes perspective, David, here's something I thought was cool. So the Kraken wallet is open source, like completely mm-hmm. open source. So it is, and they're the first exchange, I think, to ever do this. So it's available on GitHub, so you can see how it's built. They've also built IP privacy as part of this, right? So it's a lot of analytics that can be derived about, and they seem to be tailoring this to make crypto native folks feel secure that, you know, their IP address hasn't been like being collected and that kind of thing. So
pretty on brand for Kraken, I'd say.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I think Bankless listeners, again, like I'm in a place where I used to be like single wallet type of person. Now I have like multiple wallets, and this is going to have a place on my phone. It's not like a perfect right out of the gate, but I expect Kraken's going to be improving it. And a great, great, great start on this product.
It's a foot in the door for Kraken to do something. Like be more on chain again, like have their own chain. I expect this is like the first of like a direction for Kraken. Like no one ends at a wallet.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's a link in the show notes if you guys want to check it out as well. David, let's talk about Hong Kong approving the spot Bitcoin and Ether ETF. So that was announced this week. So trading has not yet begun, but that is announced. So the question is this a big deal? Is this going to bring like all of Asia's like inflows into crypto? Who has a good take here?
I think this is people are celebrating this just because we're actually kind of just schadenfreude about our own lack of ETH ETFs inside of the United States.
Yeah.
And we have the Bitcoin ETFs, right? And so, but they are also getting the ETH ETF. Is this going to move markets? Eric Balchunas says probably not. The Hong Kong market is pretty tiny. Like the total market is only $50 billion. Just because it's approved in Hong Kong doesn't mean Chinese capital has access to this. So there's like a firewall between the capital of China and the capital of Hong Kong. And also the three issuers, according to Eric Balchunas, are kind of tiny. There's no like big fish here. There's nothing like BlackRock. And then the fees on these things are about to be like 1% to 2%. So whereas it's like 0.2% to 0.3% for Bitcoin ETFs inside the United States, Eric says it's likely going to be 1% to 2% inside of Hong Kong. So it's more about just like, hey, somebody else got an ETF.
Yeah,
there is
some symbolism, right? This is like a Chinese adjacent, China adjacent like jurisdiction for certain. And for a jurisdiction kind of like famous for its capital controls, right? For them to get an Ethereum ETF besides the United States, there's probably some symbolism in that when you say, like, if I was making the argument in front of like Congress, if I was like a Congress representative who wanted to make the case, I'd just be like, Gary Gensler, okay? Hong Kong has an Ethereum ETF. Where are you? The whole world has an Ethereum ETF right now. Canada, Europe, like you can buy these ETP products. Is the U.S. really going to be a laggard for this product? Sure. Maybe there's some ammo there that we glean from this.
Yeah, so it's a symbolic victory.
All right.
It's a symbolic victory.
We'll take it. We'll take any kind of ETF victory we can at this point. David, what do we got coming up?
Coming up next, Ethereum Layer 1 is actually getting a pretty big wallet upgrade, EIP-3074. We're going to tell you everything you need to know about that particular EIP. Solana has also got its patch, so it's easier to get a transaction through now. And 0x Maki, remember that name, Ryan? 0x Maki?
Yeah.
He awakens from retirement. What's he up to, and why is everyone murmuring about it? So we're going to get to all of this and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Mantle, who makes their own chain possible so you can collect all the yield on it as well. Let's go hear from them right now. Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses EigenLayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum Layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game7 for Web3 gaming, and Bybit for TVL and Liquidity and OnRamps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle.
Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world, driving real-world use cases like mobile payments and mobile DeFi. And with Opera MiniPay as one of the fastest-growing Web3 wallets, Celo is seeing a meteoric rise with over 300 million transactions and 1.5 million monthly active addresses. And now, Celo is looking to come home to Ethereum as a layer 2. Optimism, Polygon, Matter Labs, and Arbitrum have all thrown their hats in the ring for the Celo layer 2 to build upon their stacks. Why the competition? The Celo Layer 2 will bring huge advantages like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability secured by Ethereum validators, and one-block finality. What does that all mean for you? With Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas natively using ERC-20 tokens, sending crypto to phone numbers across wallets using Social Connect. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forums, follow Celo on Twitter, and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
Launching a token? Don't let complex legal and tax issues slow you down. Toku provides specialized support to optimize your launch and ensure that you as a founder and your team and your investors get the most tax-efficient outcomes. The Toku team understands the crypto space inside and out and will ensure your token launch is fully compliant while maximizing tax efficiency. Toku can connect you with the best attorneys if you need them to make sure that you have the best advice, and Toku can help to optimize your taxes so you pay the least possible amount of taxes while still maintaining legal compliance. With Toku's guidance, you can concentrate on building your company while Toku handles the logistics. Token launches don't have to be complicated. Talk to Toku today to get a free initial token valuation.
Ethereum super wallets. That's what I'm calling them. I don't know if that'll catch on at all, but this is a pretty cool upgrade. It is protocol level. It is coming in the next Ethereum hard fork. It has, of course, an EIP. I'm going to have you recite because I don't yet have this one.
3074.
3074. I don't have this memorized, but it is a pretty significant upgrade. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about it?
This is account abstraction, which Bankless listeners have heard countless times, which has generally been in the domain of layer twos. We all need account abstraction. Everyone needs account abstraction. Gosh, what is account abstraction? Basically, it puts logic into your wallet. So it turns your wallet, which is usually just a dummy wallet. It is what's formerly called as an externally owned account, an EOA. It's basically just a public key and a private key with no logic in it whatsoever. Smart accounts, smart contract wallets, account abstraction are trying to produce smart contract wallets. So your wallet is like a brain. It's got like chip, it's got logic in it, it's got expressivity. In the same way that Bitcoin is Bitcoin, Ethereum is Ethereum, externally owned accounts are like Bitcoin, smart contract wallets are like Ethereum. How to design one and what features we should formally enshrine into the layer one has been a topic of debate amongst Ethereum
long
developers
time,
for like
forever.
As long as I've been in crypto, as long as I've been here in Ethereum. EIP 3074 has been a thing for a very long time. It was picked up. It was debated years ago. It was dropped. It was ignored. It got picked up again recently. Now it's getting pushed through. And so it's actually kind of like a monumental hurdle that's overcome, because this is actually kind of like the start of increasing the scope of the sophistication of smart contract wallets that are enabled in the layer one. We are starting small as we do in Ethereum, and then we are expanding the scope as we come to consensus about what features should be enshrined on the layer one. This is like doing the thing that Ethereum is very cautious about doing, which is putting opinions and adding complexity into the layer one, but we're doing it. And so if you've ever traded a token on Uniswap that you haven't traded before, you have to go and first approve that token.
Multiple steps.
Yep. Now this is all being bundled up into one single like smart service. So no more token approvals at the layer one. Also, this unlocks sponsor accounts. And so you can actually have no gas in your wallet, but through smart contract wallets, you can actually have a third party pay for your gas for you. And so like you actually don't need any gas. You just have assets and somebody else pays for your gas. And there's a bunch of other features as well. But basically, like I said, it's just the big first foot in the door to unlock the entire like landscape of smart contract wallets for the Ethereum layer one.
Yeah, wallet asset recovery is another thing about this. So we could have like social recovery wallets. Mm-hmm. I think that's great. Here's the thing I'm most excited about this. All right. So a bunch of people, crypto natives listening to Bankless right now, they might have dozens of wallets, right? So the question is, what happens to those wallets? Do I have to create brand new wallets? Here's the best part. Okay. You can migrate your existing EOA wallet, same ETH address, to account abstraction wallet and get all of those benefits. That I didn't realize before I learned a bit more about this that it would be like so backward compatible, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or like I thought, I just assumed that we'd have to like create all new wallets and this would be right. possible in the future. My legacy wallets are like all FUBAR, but they're not. You can actually like all the wallets that you've spent so much time and have so much history in, they can turn into account abstraction wallets, which I think is a pretty big deal. Give us a sense for when this is coming, David. So next Ethereum hard fork. Okay. So it's been approved for that, but when is the next mm-hmm. Ethereum hard fork?
Well, no one really knows when. No one asks when is the next
yes,
Ethereum hard fork.
Yes, we do. We always do. We always ask.
Sometime at the end of this year, probably, which means probably at the start of next year, which means probably Q2 of next year. These things tend to get delayed. So think like early 2025.
Early 2025. Some nice padding, David. I'm optimistic for Q1 2025 that we'll have this, but we'll see. You know?
This again, the next upgrade, next a hard fork for Ethereum is called Pectra, which is a combination of, should we even go into this? I think we should. Prague and Electra. So Electra is a star, Ryan. Prague is a city. But Prague is the execution layer of Ethereum and Electra is the consensus layer of Ethereum.
Wait, Electra is a star?
You mean yeah, so star. This is how Ethereum hard forks are named. So you take a city that's on planet Earth and that is the execution layer hard fork. And then you take a star, a name of a star somewhere in the sky, and then you portmanteau them together. And that's how we name Ethereum hard forks. Did you know that?
Oh, wow. No, I didn't know that. And how many
this
stars?
This is what happens when you let dev nerds name your hard fork.
I want Betelgeuse. You know that star? Big red dwarf.
Well, so we already passed B. So E it was A, B, C, D. So like after Electra, it will be an F named star.
An F star?
With F star. Yeah.
I don't know any F stars.
I don't know any F stars either.
No, all right. Well, I can't wait.
But I bet you the EF devs do because they would.
Nerds.
Nerds.
We love you guys. That's great. I'm really excited to talk about, what is it? You said
F-star.
Pectra?
Pectra, yeah.
Yeah. Get the people excited about Pectra. It's coming. all right. Tell us about Eigenlayer because it did
I'm
a mainnet
so
last week. Yeah. Now mm-hmm. it's unpausing restaking deposits. What does this mean? Does this mean Floodgate is open to all the capital, all of the ETH that's
right.
important to Eigenlayer? Now you can just like, you know, there's no limit.
There's no limit.
There's no cap.
There's no limit. Yeah. Okay. So there was $12.5-13 billion of ETH and related LSTs inside of Eigenlayer
like
at the time of the cap.
4 million? In
4
ETH
million
supply,
ETH?
Something like that?
Yeah, something like that. Someone do the math for me. They are now completely just removing the cap on LSTs. And so there was never any cap on native restaking, so you could always put vanilla Ether in and natively restake, and you would generally do this via LRTs like EtherFi or Renzo or whatever. But now there's actually just no formal caps whatsoever.
We've slowed down a little bit. Like how high do you think? I mean, this is like at.
I mean, how much ETH can Eigenlayer take?
Right?
Take up a lot of ETH.
I mean, we're at like what? You're like 4% ish of supply, something like this.
3%.
I guess that's not that much. The sure. Bitcoin ETFs already have over 3% of
sure.
Bitcoin supply. Sure. I think we could go higher. I think we could get to 5, 6, 7.
Eigenlayer
eight.
Is equivalent to the Bitcoin ETFs for Ethereum. That's large.
Don't you think it's that it could slurp up that much in terms of ETH? I guess it depends.
I mean, it already has.
No, but like, yes, it already has. But like, I'm calling for like a higher number. I'm calling for like, I wonder
say,
if we'll see.
Say a number.
When you will won't. We see double digits? Double digit ETH supply.
Percentage or ETH and Eigenmeier?
Percent.
Wow, 10%. Okay, so you need, what is that? 12 million Ether and Eigenmeier?
We need to like triple.
Man, that is, I don't know.
It depends really, on the AVSs, I think.
It depends on the AVSs.
The depends on how much yield. Yeah. If you don't speak mm-hmm. Eigenlayer, AVS is just the thing built on Eigenapps. Top of Eigenlayer, Eigenapps.
The things that produce the yield. They produce the utility, they collect the fees, they give them to the LRTs, and then they are collected by capital depositors.
Restaking has been an absolute massive narrative this cycle, particularly for
an uncontested narrative for a very long time.
Let me tell you, David, something that's here, whether you like it or not, it's called alt restaking.
Well,
that's what I'm calling it. I don't know if any of that's going to catch on, but we've got some new restaking networks on the scene that are doing non-Ethereum stuff. One is called Nectar. Is it Nectar?
Nectar.
Okay. And then this one, Karak?
I don't know. Karak, K-A-R-A-K. Bank listeners, you figure out how to pronounce that.
Big raise on this one, too.
Big raise,
Karak got $1 billion from a whole bunch of VCs to accelerate Universal Security.
They got $48 million at a $1 billion valuation.
Gosh. Man, I am a VC. I should know how this works. okay, so alt restaking, that's a thing. And the focus, it seems to be, at least with this narrative, is non-Ethereum tokens. So Eigenlayer, the only thing you can stake inside of Eigenlayer right now is Ether, right? And so
Ether derivatives
mm-hmm. and these restaking networks are saying, hey, we could do all of the tokens. Why stop at ETH? We can do everything. There's one interesting thing though here, which is like Eigenlayer is also going to do other things besides Ethereum, and that's been part of their design from day one, is where they start with Ether because it's kind of the most money like highest economic bandwidth thing.
It's mainly the unit of account of, this is Sriram's explanation. You use Ether because it's the unit of account of like the respective ecosystems. Because like generally the economics are denominated in Ether.
You have to pay your taxes in Ether basically. So you may as well.
Right. Yeah. So they don't want any cross volatility risks. So you denominate your assets and your liabilities in the same unit of account. You start off by Ether because that's what the Ethereum ecosystem generally denominates in. But then you can also expand to other assets because mainly you don't want to have this extra risk, which is cross asset volatility.
There you go.
And so this Eigenlayer strategy is like, well, most things are going to be ETH denominated first, and then we'll get to like USEC things denominated later. A pretty cool like little rabbit hole in the Eigenlayer ecosystem is dual staking. And so you would stake Ether, but then you would also stake the native token of a respective AVS as well. And so you can have both things providing security. And this is like the Eigenlayer like slow crescendo of scope. So you start with ETH, then you add like a native token of a specific app, and then eventually you can just do anything as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's a hallmark of Eigenlayer's success that they have alts now. Mm-hmm. You're successful when you start getting alternatives to your solution coming aboard. So, and I do think this is going to be, it's been a super successful narrative. So, of course, it was going to attract competitors.
And this is related to mostly Karak network. Their whole narrative is like, you can stake anything. Nectar, the first one that we talked about, their whole thing is DVT, distributed validator technology. This is actually a pivot from Diva. So if y'all remember the Diva LST project that was always trying to like leverage DVT to kind of just be an improved version of Rocket Pool, they have since pivoted into being a restaking platform that leverages DVT. So if for bankless listeners that remember that name, that's where Nectar came from.
I'm sure we are going to be talking about restaking at the Permissionless conference, mm-hmm. which, you know, anytime we get a chance to shout out Permissionless, mm-hmm. I'm going to be there. David's going to be there. Yeah. It's in October.
Many of these projects are going to be there. We actually do have a panel about
restaking?
Alt restaking. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because there's a restaking. Well, there's Babylon on Bitcoin. There's a restaking project on Solana. And so these aren't the first two like alt restaking ones. These are just the first two to actually also focus on Ethereum.
Sriram's coming to that as well. Yep. He's coming to Permissionless. Bankless listener, if you want a 10% discount, you can go get that. The code BANKLESS10 at mm-hmm. any point in time. And you'll like go... come to Permissionless with us. It's going to be a great conference. We'll be in the middle of the bull market. It'll be beautiful. Great. It'll be good times. Great.
Bankless citizens, you guys get 30%. So if you guys are listening to this on the RSS feed or wherever you're a bankless citizen,
don't
you
settle get 10%.
Don't settle for 10%. The code is not bankless 30. So don't try that.
All right, David, Immutable is doing some are they doing layer threes?
More chains. We're talking about more chains on Ethereum.
It's layer threes, so, right? Am
yeah,
I right?
So they are building what is called the Immutable Nexus. Okay. The ecosystem of gaming chains. And so, of course, they are building out chains for the games that are part of the Immutable ecosystem. There's a lot of games coming online right now. I was actually, I don't think you're much of a gamer these days, Ryan, but there's this Dark Souls game. Are you familiar with Dark Souls?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this Dark Souls, because like it created its whole entire genre, because it's such an awesome series of games. There's a crypto-esque, not even esque, there's a Dark Souls game where all the assets are on-chain.
Really?
Yeah.
What's this called?
The Fabled. Yeah. I actually demoed it at ETH Denver last year.
About these things. Are people just no users? People
aren't
playing.
Different world. Them? This one isn't out yet. It's on Steam with a coming soon. You can like demo it if you want to. I think you can like jump through some hoops.
Steam is totally fine with like crypto games, because I know some platforms have not been.
Well, this hasn't launched, but it's got a Steam page. It's got a Steam page for this game that is very elegant. The graphics are beautiful. It was a little bit clunky when I played it, but I played it back in 2023, and so like over a year ago. So I'm assuming
is Fable going to be on Immutable? Or
I think
it
so. The Fabled? I think so. I think it's an Immutable Fabled, game. Okay. I don't know. Right. I'll ask Robbie. Anyways, it might have its own chain, because that's what this whole announcement is. And so you are, as a game, get to have your own ZK EVM, because the costs of chains are just like so low these days. Spinning up a chain with Conduit, you can go to Conduit and just spin up an OP stack chain for $3,000 a month. It's probably a little bit more EVM.
This is a ZK EVM chain that settles on top of Immutable, which is a layer two, which settles on top of Ethereum, right? So we got chains on chains again. It's a layer three, David. I found
kind
another
of.
Layer three.
It's not exactly a layer three. Degen is a strict layer three. Okay. The ZK EVM, it's more of a fractal mesh network. So it's a little bit more horizontal. So there's not strict settling down to one specific chain. It's actually all kind of like settles together. Yeah. But you do get dedicated throughput. Gaming is like one of the most reasons why you would want your own sovereign chain, because you don't want to share block space with a different game. And so you get perfect customization. You get to reconfigure what your chain looks like. You can configure native tokens for gas and staking, so your game can have a native token. And then you get the set of ecosystem partners out of Immutable. So congrats to Immutable.
David, I know you are one to stay on the frontier of crypto, aren't you? Right. So I wanted to hear about some of your recent frontier experiences. I think you're coming up with podcasts on these, because I've been tuning into the Bankless Premium feed, and I caught one of the... Well, I haven't listened to it yet, but it's waiting for me on the feed, where you go and you talk about the crypto, the game. Mm-hmm. Let's start there. What is crypto the game? Because I've been among like my crypto friend circles... everyone's talking about this thing, and it's been described to me as like Survivor meets crypto.
It's about
like
right.
reality TV show type of thing. Like, what is this thing?
Yeah, think of it like an MMO, massive multiplayer online Survivor reality TV show
with economic reward. Like, do I get the prize for like if I win?
Yeah, economic reward is like putting it into like crypto terms. You get a prize for winning the game, but
just say prize.
Yes, it's a prize. It's not like Axie Infinity where there's like an economic game. It's much more like a reality TV show where like, so the way that the game works, this is crypto the game. There has been two seasons. So we have seen two of these things happen. Season one lasted 10 days. Season two lasted 10 days. Season one had about 300 players. Season two had about 800 players. And you put in a 0.1 ETH entrance fee and to the pot, and then the winner gets the entire pot minus the cut for the game devs who put in a ton of work building this thing. And so it's also like, it's very much like Squid Games, you know, the Netflix Squid Games things where everyone, like, it starts off with like 1,000 people or whatever, and then it gets whittled down, and then the last one gets all the
money. People aren't getting killed here. What, they're just getting voted off, right?
They get eliminated. Yeah. And so
it's a social game.
Yeah.
Man, that sounds terrible. This just sounds like high school. I don't want to do this. Why would I do this?
Apparently people are having a ton of fun. And so, like, there's the actual game, which is, like, once per day, there's a trial that you have to go do, like, a little mini game. Like, you have to go complete a quest or something. You have to do an on-chain scavenger hunt. Sometimes there's a real-life scavenger hunt. There's a bunch of different games. Every 24 hours is, like, the same. Or there's a new game. But then at the end of every 24 hours, there's a voting period to vote people off the island, like vote to eliminate.
Wow, brutal.
And so you are you're grouped up at the very beginning. And so you and your group have to like coordinate and you generally trust each other. But you also know that eventually you're going to have to vote some of these people off. But mainly since you're grouped up, you want to vote other tribes off first. It's a game of elimination.
Why don't you do this? Have you done this?
I have not done this. I have heard... One of the things that I like about this, actually, is, like, it's a very equitable game.
Oh, it's so, like, not, like, a popularity contest?
No, it's definitely no. In fact, popularity is, like, kind of a curse, because then you're a target.
Oh, yeah. So is that what you're saying?
I have been told that if I entered the game as a player, that there would just be a huge target on my back, just because, like, oh, David, let's just vote him off. Let's just get him out of here.
I could see that, you know, yeah. given some of your comments on Bankless, I could definitely see that. Made some enemies, David. All right. Yeah. Well, that's cool. So do you think it's cool? You think it's something that Bankless listeners might be interested in on the frontier?
Well, I mean, we have our own employees who are like, can't get their eyes off of the game.
I know. All right. All right.
Some proof is in the pudding. It's one of the most popular things to come out. So yeah, season three, it will happen in like 4 to 6 weeks or something.
And if you want to find out more, David did like a 20-minute episode or something. It's on the Bankless premium feed. If you are a Bankless citizen, you have access to that right now. I'm going to actually listen to that and see if it's I won't have time for it. I'm not going to do it.
Consuming for how much. But like the winner got 72 Ether of season two.
That's big. That's pretty cool.
That's big.
All right. What's the other thing you're on the frontier of these days?
Okay, so this is the 0x Maki project. For those who don't know the lore around 0x Maki, he was the first person to step up and run the whole sushi swap project after Chef Nomi rugged. So generally, like, very technically talented, beloved
dev. He didn't rug
anyone,
though, right? 0x Maki?
0x Maki did not. Chef Nomi did.
He was the good guy in crypto history, right?
Yes, 0x Maki was the one that, like, fixed the ship of SushiSwap after Chef Nomi like effed it up. Yeah. But this is ancient 2021.
So
ancient.
Know this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, he's been involved with a bunch of stuff. Very well respected, beloved dev. Has been hyping this thing up called Hero Glyphs. And no one knows what this is because it's not released yet. But it will be by the time it's released when Bankless listeners listen to it because it's releasing tomorrow. It's touted to be this thing that helps the decentralization of Ethereum, the Ethereum validator network. Mm. So it's a mechanism that rewards decentralization. It rewards solo stakers over like organizational or institutional stakers. And everyone's like, how do you do that? That is an impossible nut to crack. No one's been able to figure out how to do that. Like, how do you even identify solo stakers? And so like, I spent like 30 minutes talking with him. It's not on a podcast, but if this thing does blow up, maybe we will do a podcast. It's pretty clever. So basically how this works, you know, graffiti space in the Beacon Chain, Ryan?
Yeah, I do know this.
Okay, so in the Beacon Chain, when you as a proposer of a block, as a ETH validator, there is this thing called graffiti. And actually, I don't know why core devs put this in there, and Maki said he didn't know why either, but like there is this 32-character space for you to put a little graffiti every time you propose a block to Ethereum. So if you propose a block, you get to say like something, something, something. Mm-hmm. When Bankless proposes a block, because we run our validators, it says, Bankless was here.
Super yeah, that's creative. Right. That's
genius.
Right. I forgot we did that. Yeah.
So original.
Clever.
So
yeah,
clever.
Super original. I dare you to copy us. It's amazing.
Anyways, that is kind of like, well, because anything is data availability that has characters in it. And so.
I'm shaking my head.
And so what 0x Maki is doing is he is using graffiti space to produce like ordinals type things except instead of producing ordinals, you can actually mint a token on a layer two by encoding using a very like similar to ENS coding scheme. You can like code in a token. So like $ Bonkless.
You just create a syntax for it and you stuff it in a block in a place where like it's not supposed to be. Data's not supposed to be here. This is exactly, I'm surprised that this is such Bitcoin ordinals energy. I'm surprised Casey
Rotimore didn't do this.
Rotimore isn't doing this, but it's
but he's a Bitcoiner, right?
Yeah, but it's the same kind of approach.
It's the same concept. It's the same concept.
There's this empty data field.
We could put some tokens in there.
if we can just create a scheme and a way to decipher it, then like we can stuff stuff in it. So that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
Well, how does this benefit solo stakers? That's the part I don't understand.
Because you can't claim these. So who gets these tokens? So the token is minted when you propose a block and you put the token like ticker into the graffiti.
Yeah.
But the token is minted on a layer two. So you actually don't touch the layer one. But it's minted to the address that your withdrawal credentials is set to.
Oh,
and
cool.
So a solo staker generally has their withdrawal addresses set to like an EOA that they own, but like Lido does not. Like Lido has it set to a DAO, like Rockable has it set to their org. Any sort of institution has it set to a smart contract. And in this protocol, in Hieroglyphs, if your withdrawal address is a smart contract, it's invalid. It is only valid for people who have their withdrawal addresses set to individual EOAs. So it's not a perfect targeting of solo stakers. So it's like he didn't perfectly crack the nut, but like it's directionally correct. And it's going to create a bunch of meme coins that only solo stakers have access
to. This sounds so much like runes to me.
It basically is runes, but using Ethereum beacon chain.
It's going to be the ERC-20 killer is here. It's a hieroglyph. We're going to encode it in graffiti. Wow. Okay,
We'll see if it takes off.
It's easy for it to take something like that to take off on Bitcoin, because what other option do you have?
Yeah, I have no
This is a little
option.
Bit different in Ethereum, but it could be good for meme coins. Who knows? I'm sure we'll have to see.
The meme is good.
Update us on Solana. So they had like
is this my job?
Yes, you are our bankless Solana correspondent,
Solana responder.
So Solana was having some problems with all of the volume it was receiving. In particular, there was a project called Aur that I think was like quote unquote spamming the network. Anyway, the end result was Solana users couldn't get transactions through. They got pushed out. You keep hitting the button and failed transaction. There's supposed to be an update for this. They deployed the update. Am I right about this? Like, what is the update? What happened? Did it work?
Okay, so Solana version 1.17.31, which is this, I think, short-term interim fix for what is a longer, more sustainable fix, is now deployed. I think the validators are now on this version. I'm not going to pretend that I know what's in this version, so I'm just going to read a tweet from somebody who does know. If I just read this out, it would just be a bunch of networking stuff. So a bunch of networking stuff changed in the Solana stack, and now it works better.
Well, that was the problem, right? There's still, like, one part of the problem was the network tech that they had chosen just, like, wasn't kind of, like, scaling to the level that they needed, so they swapped that out. There's some other problems, like economic sustainability problems. But what I'm hearing from Solana users, it's been a little bit since I used the Solana network, but what I'm hearing from Solana power users is it's kind of like cleared up. And part of this, by the way, is Aur has stopped. You know, like this chain that was spamming everyone has kind of stopped. Right. So, but also this network change was somewhat effective. So there you go. We got our hot fix in.
Basically, so since Solana does not have a mempool, what becomes the mempool is like the networking layer of Solana, aka the internet. So that is the Solana mempool, is like the networking layer.
Are you asking me this?
No, I'm telling you that. This is what happens when you delete a mempool, is that it moves into the networking layer. So it's just like the message messaging protocol around Solana. So they're just improving that.
David, you want to hear about a stablecoin bill?
I love it. Tell me more.
You don't love it. It sucks. It really sucks. This is Senator Lummis and Senator Gillibrand bill. It says introduce a bipartisan landmark legislation to create regulatory frameworks for stablecoins. Sounds really good, right?
Yeah, we do want regulatory frameworks for stablecoins. So what's up?
I saw this and I was kind of excited. Hey, is it finally time? Are we getting like good regulation around stablecoins? I asked our crypto lawyer friends, and my first question was, of course, where I always start with stablecoins. Legislation is, does this kill DAI? Their answer was, yes, it kills DAI.
Oh,
it, it, okay, it so it's kills bad. Any kind of algorithmic stablecoin, followed by my like crypto lawyer contest.
DAI's not an algorithmic stablecoin. But they say it is.
Yeah. Okay. It kills DAI, right? Also Luna and everything like that, but also
Let me guess. It kills everything that doesn't have US dollars in a bank somewhere.
It might even kill USDC, David. That's how silly this is. All right. Anyway, so the overarching comment from crypto lawyers, because, you know, Senator Lummis has been a friend of crypto, so-called, with friends like these, who needs enemies? All right, that was like the comment, because like this is bad, actually. It kills every stable that's not issued by a bank or a chartered trust, which I don't think that's USDC.
It's just giving the power to the bank.
Yep. And then also it has these like extra territorial provisions, apparently. So it's kind of like exporting. It's imagining that the entire world revolves around the US and we could just like export US law to stablecoin transactions that are completely outside of the US. So it's bad. It's not great. I asked if this was like the bill that's going to go forward. It has some support. It's very early. People are still digesting it. There are other different bills that are in some sort of like formulation phase. So hopefully we just like reform this bill. We get the, you know, like all the stupid stuff out of it. And we get the good stuff back into it. And it's a real bill, but it's like discouraging. It's discouraging because like,
it kind of just makes me think, Congress.
And this is what they give us. Right. No thanks. Don't help us with the regulation then. Like just...
We keep on saying like, hey, we ultimately need to get legislation from the Congress.
Yeah.
And I'm always assuming like, sure, they're going to throw like 7 bad bills at us and then the 8th one will finally be good and we'll just get that one in. But that also was like 4 bills ago.
Yeah.
And so it kind of just feels like, oh yeah, we actually have to like get a good bill and we haven't gotten that ever.
This is Jake Chervinsky. The bill published today is deeply flawed. It appears to ban nearly everything except a narrow band of centralized custodial stablecoins. This would be far worse than the status quo.
Sick.
You want to run for Congress, David? Let's do it.
No, absolutely.
You and I, let's go fix this.
I don't.
Mr. Hoffman goes to Washington. We'll fix it all.
I would not survive a day in Washington. I would get chewed up by those politicians.
Let's talk about raises, David.
2 startup raises that we want to highlight out of the Bankless Ventures universe this week. Aligned Layer, raising $2.6 million. Congrats, guys. What is Aligned Layer? Aligned Layer is an AVS, which is outside of the EigenLayer ecosystem. It is basically a sidecar to Ethereum for super cheap ZK verifications. This is in the ZK universe. Basically, just like how we have blob space on the Ethereum Layer 1, EIP-4844, eventually, in the fullness of time, Ethereum also wants to enshrine specific ZK circuits to have inside of the feature set of the Ethereum Layer 1 to benefit rollups, right? More secure ZK settlement, just like a feature for Layer 2s and just people to use.
Because ZK EVM, ZK rollups are consuming that service right now, right?
Totally.
You have to get your ZK proof verified on Ethereum and it's expensive right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what if we just actually dedicated a ZK circuit as a part of the Ethereum protocol that Layer 2, ZK Layer 2s could very trustlessly just leverage for trustless perfect settlement of their Layer 2s. This is something that will eventually be inside of the Ethereum protocol. But the total scope of all of these ZK circuits that could exist is completely limitless. And so for everything else that's not making it into the Ethereum Layer 1, there's Aligned Layer, an external AVS for any sort of extremely cheap, extremely fast ZK proving. Kind of like how EigenDA is similar to Ethereum DA, but using EigenLayer as an AVS. Aligned Layer is an EigenLayer AVS except for ZK circuit proving.
Yeah, the net is this is going to make proving and verification really, really cheap, which hopefully will enable a massive ecosystem of new ZK apps. Right. Like a ZK rollup is just one type of ZK app, and we haven't seen what's possible in kind of this whole sphere.
Second up is Nebra, which is a ZK proof aggregator. So all of these ZK rollups who submit proofs down to the Ethereum Layer 1, they pay for that. They pay to put their proof down on the Ethereum Layer 1. But a ZK snark is succinct, as in it is a very specific number of characters. That's what the succinct is here. What if Nebra just consumed other people's ZK proofs and then aggregated them all together and spit out another ZK proof to settle all that singular ZK proof down to the Ethereum Layer 1? Economies of scale is more cheap for all of these ZK proofs. And so Nebra, ZK proof aggregator, raised $4.5 million. Again, one of a Bankless Ventures portfolio company. So congrats to Aligned Layer and Nebra.
This is all part of the trend of going from like compute to trustless compute. I mean, there are some ZK bulls out there who think basically the entire internet is going to be ZKified. Right?
I'm one of them.
Right? And so like that's why we need
everything
abundant,
is ZK.
We need abundant ZK verification. We need it to be super cheap. Yeah.
ZK on your phone, ZK on your browser, ZK on your smart refrigerator, just because, like, everything will
ZK
be
ZK. Everywhere. ZK yep. everywhere. David, tell me about the meme of the week, man. Let's end with this.
Okay, so this is one of the greatest, like, tweets I saw this week. Tim Copeland so tweeting out the classic shot chaser line. And Avi Eisenberg, if you guys remember this name, who is the person who did some on-chain market manipulation of I believe Mango markets. If the meme "I executed a highly profitable trading strategy" means anything to you, this is that guy. And right after this individual manipulated some economic oracles to exploit Mango markets, he tweets out, "What are you going to do? Arrest me?" And this is when, right after he just exploited
2022,
he exploited Mango markets for like some millions of dollars. And here is a picture from an article that went out just this last week. Federal jurors in New York on Thursday found Avi Eisenberg, 28, guilty of commodities fraud, commodities manipulation, and wire fraud for his actions on October 11th, 2022, when his trading boosted the prices of future contract by 1,300% in 20 minutes. Sentencing is set for July 29th. He was indeed arrested. Crimes are still crimes when you do them in crypto. PSA to Bankless Nation.
So if I steal your crypto money, David, it's still stealing, huh?
That is still theft. If you steal crypto from someone, it is still theft. If you manipulate markets, it is still illegal commodities market manipulation. Crimes are still crimes when you do them in crypto.
That's
public reminder.
Know. I thought all of this was like imaginary money, but like it's good to know that this is serious stuff. Crimes are crimes. All right, guys, let's end with this. Of course, you know, crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.